Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight it's my pleasure to welcome back Burl Hall and his wife, Mary Hall. They are authors of Sophia's Web, A Passionate Call to Heal Our Wounded Nature. Burl is an author, has been an online radio co-host of Envision This, along with his wife. He's a philosopher, lover of Sophia, a mystic, and a retired counselor. He writes with the editorial assistance of his muse and wife, Mary Hall, a retired teacher, author of Bringing Food Home, the Main Example, and his co-host on Envision This. Together, they enjoy grandparenting, permaculture gardening at their home in Sabattis, Maine, and meeting and profiling visionaries to interview on their radio show. If you want to visit them on their website, where they blog and post about their radio guests and converse with folks, you can go to World Wide Web, www.envisionthismedia.com. That's www.envisionthismedia.com. And so I would like to welcome Burl. And Burl, I don't know if I asked you, but I'll ask you now, how are you tonight?
How am I tonight? I wish I could say great. I'm having some stomach issues, but other than that, I'm doing fine. Looking forward to the interview.
Good. Well, I'm sorry about the stomach issues. Those can be distressing, certainly. But I'm glad to have you back on the show. Of course, tonight we had talked about discussing your personal journey vis-a-vis your life history as a mystic, and also your challenges as you are progressing with Alzheimer's disease, which would be of great interest to a lot of people. So I'd like to start off talking to you a little bit about what you can remember of your early spiritual experiences and how that impacted you.
Well, my earliest ones that I can remember was when I was around 5 years old. And I used to realize that there was a goddess figure, and this is going to sound funny, but she used to sit on my, you had a parakeet, she used to sit on top of the cage. And so that was my first, and, you know, she never said anything. Wait a minute, let me just point something out. Oh, yes, she was totally radiant in her power, and that power, and, you know, I didn't use these terms until I was an adult, is greater than all the atomic bombs that humanity can bring, and I don't mean that in a violent way. I mean in a pure creative.
Well, did you talk to anybody about it at the time?
No.
And if so, what happened?
Oh my gosh! No, I just kept it to myself. I didn't, I knew that if even at a young age, that if I told my mother or grandmother or my father, they would have probably just laughed at a silly kid, you know, kind of thing. So I kept it quiet, and it was interesting because as I went on in school and that sort of thing, started learning about like Greek mythology and the goddess Athena and that sort of thing. And it was interesting because I automatically said, okay, Athena is wisdom because wisdom is a conception of thought. And that actually hit the nail right on the head for both Sophia and for Athena, but also for a number of goddesses throughout the world, from Native American to Oriental to African. I mean, there's really a network of similar teachings throughout, and I'm going to say all religions. It's, you know, I think it's a shame that we, you know, battle and say, well, my religion is the true religion, whereas actually when you get down to them, they're all pretty much going the same way.
That's the thing I don't understand. At their core, all religions seem to uphold the same kind of spiritual principles, and why we focus on differences and get into wars and that kind of thing, especially in the name of religion, makes absolutely no sense to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And especially with the Christian religion, who, you know, Christ preached love and peace, and, you know, we've been the most warring, at least American Christianity has been the most warring faction going over the past several centuries, you know.
What was your religious background as a child?
My grandmother and my was, you know, more or less, you know, she was brought up in churches, and so that was my little bit of that. But to be honest, I didn't really get a lot of religious teachings in the house. My mom and my grandmother and my father never really went to church. And, yeah, I went to church a couple of times, but in all honesty, I wasn't all that comfortable with it. I think for me, it's a matter of, you know, I was seeing something different. You know, with a lot of the religions, especially the Protestant religions, is that there's a lot of feuding between who's right and who's wrong. And, you know, for me, it all boils into Unitarian, where we're all basically saying the same thing.
Right, right. Well, I just wondered what your early exposure to religion, and it sounds like it was Christianity, what kind of impact had on your thinking and your belief system as it started out, and then what happened with it after it evolved further.
And in line with that, around, I would say I was about 5 years old, I started having visions of a woman. And, you know, she was extremely powerful. Oh, I did tell you that. I'm sorry. That's Mary. Hold on.
That's okay.
Hi, it's Mary. And I was just coming across a part of the book that he wrote, Sophia's Web, A Passionate Guide to Heal Our Wounded Nature. And he says he began meditating on his experiences. He says, I related the process to a woman giving birth. Like a woman's womb from which a baby emerges, there appeared to be an invisible womb in the depths of my soul, which I experienced as an infinite point of singularity existing between time and space. It was from this point that my thoughts appeared to flow into manifestation. I further realized the thought was eternal, as an egg exists in a woman's ovaries as a potential human being from the time she was herself a fetus. The thought has existed within me as a potential insight waiting to unfold.
Oh, my. Well, was he able to follow all of what you just read?
Were you able to follow all of what I just read?
Hi.
Hi. I just wondered if we could pick up from that piece and and discuss what further understandings you came to as a result of what you had written.
Wait a minute, I can barely read this, Mary.
If you're not able to do it, fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I better, because my eyes are not doing that well right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So what other mystical experiences have you had along the way, and how has that shaped your own personal sense of spirituality and how you relate to the world?
Well, on a more minor, of course, I had the visions as a five-year-old, where at the time I didn't name her Sophia. I just saw her as a woman that would show up and then disappear. excuse me, that was when I was about 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got into school, I started learning about the goddess Athena. Athena was the one that really opened me up to this, because Athena was the goddess of wisdom in Greek. And I automatically, it was very interesting, I automatically said, okay, well, you know, Athena or wisdom is feminine because she conceives thought. So, you know, I put a very natural binding into how women give birth and also how the cosmos gives birth. Is that making sense?
Yeah, it does make absolute sense to me. It's a fitting metaphor. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, I can get into some of my dreams.
Sure.
The dreams, it was back in the 90s, and I started having dreams of the same woman that I saw back when I was 5 years old. And she started appearing in dreams. And the very first dream I had was her taking me up above the planetary atmosphere. And I got a holistic, a very whole unity sense. I mean, to explain the emotionality and the depth of it, I can't really do, but everything was a unity in all of its diversity. And that dream was paramount to me writing my story, but it also led me to, actually I'm losing my thought because Mary was saying something here. Sorry about that.
Hold on. That's all right.
Hi.
Hi.
About that first dream, he wrote after discussing it, how a single dream can lead one humble seeker to the same understanding of the universe that is variously expressed by the world's greatest sages and mystics.
Mm. Mm. It sounds like it was a profound dream.
Yeah. Yeah, several of his were, but that one seemed to tie his childhood experiences together with what he was experiencing as a young man and led him on to exploring more of what there was in mystical thinking.
Well, maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
About
his exploration after that dream.
Okay.
Talking about your exploration and mysticism.
Well, after that dream, to be honest, I didn't really, I mean, I was 5 years old at that time. And, okay, Mary was talking about a 1990s dream. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. Anyway, I started having dreams of a goddess that I realized back when I was 5 years old, actually. She used to sit on the birdcage. But anyway, the dream, she took my arms and took me up above the earth. And then when we got above the earth, you know, she at first reached out her arms to embrace the planet. And then I mimicked her behavior. And then there was a deep sense of love that came upon me, extremely powerful. And it was right after that dream that I said, well, I need to write a book. And then, you know, I also, after that, I started listening to, not listening, but finding out more about the biblical wisdom and understanding, which in Greek would have been Sophia Episteme. And because of my anger towards Christianity, I actually use that to make peace with the religion and some of the, you know, wars and stuff like that that they've instigated. So,
how did you do that?
How
did you do that?
Why did I do that?
No, how did you do that? How did you make peace with the?
I started seeing that, you know, that religion, including the Christian religion, is very well founded in a deep universal truth. And in fact, with Sophia's Web, I point out all the unity between all the various religions in their diversity. And, you know, of course, we in the United States, well, in the Western world, live in a divide and conquer world. And
yes,
what she was basically saying in the dreams and, you know, and that sort of thing is that, no, you're not. You are unified and one and operate as one organism throughout the planet. That doesn't mean there's not diversity, because diversity is important for the planet, too, and for
right.
life.
How do you see that we can work with what she revealed to you to carry a message to wake up other people to the fact that we are all one? How can we do that at an individual level?
That's a good question, because I'm still bouncing my head up against the wall on that, because that's basically the theme of my writing, is that, you know, when you get down to it, the Christian religions, the Hindu, the Buddhist, the pagan, and so on, are really united at their core.
Right.
And to get that across, and I think the big barrier to this is that, you know, we're so locked into that divide and conquer mentality that we can't see anything else, that we can't see ourselves in our brother or sister's eyes. Even though that sort of thing is blatantly put out by Jesus Christ, like when he says, you know, judge not lest you be judged, is a very holographic concept.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people have totally lost it and instead went into this conflictual mode, and, you know, we get in traced into drama and this, that, and the other thing, and it's making a mess of the world, both ecologically and also for human beings.
Well, the other thing about Jesus, I think of the golden rule and how he said to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and it makes absolutely no sense to me why Christians or anybody that might embrace his teachings as having some nugget of wisdom in them would deviate from that. I mean, I think that if we could use that as a model for our lives, we wouldn't need the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be a natural phenomenon first.
Just a matter of another. and treating one another with respect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Respect, and also, you know, anytime you look into somebody's eyes, sometimes you can get a mirror image of your own self in their pupil. So, you know, we need to start seeing ourselves in each other's eyes. It's sort of like, judge not, lest ye be judged.
Absolutely. Well, you know, every person that crosses our path is an opportunity to take a look into ourselves and to see ourselves through their eyes. You know, it's an opportunity to detach from reaction and make peace with another person, and in so doing, make peace with ourselves.
Right.
Most of us seem to have some personal discord that needs to be worked through.
Yeah. Yeah, we all go through that, including myself. So.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say about your mystical journey before we start talking about the Alzheimer's?
No. I mean, what was amazing was that, you know, I don't know if I've already said this, but it was just fascinating to me when I started looking at myths and Bibles and you know, read some of the Rig Veda and that sort of thing, is that how much these various religions are right on the same path. And in fact, even with Native Americans, like when I listen to the Kogis, who are a South American group, I mean, their version of the beginning is exactly one and the same as Genesis 1-2 and pretty much all creation stories throughout the world, which that particular verse is speaking to what physics calls the unmanifest.
Mm. I maintain that if we can find common ground with other people and use that as a starting point and just appreciate that we're all unique individuals with different beliefs, that, you know, there's no reason that we can't get along and respect one another's different attitudes and beliefs. You know, that's, variety is a spice of life, so they say.
Yeah, definitely. One of the poems that Burl has written, he's written many poems, but gets to that point, and I'd like to read it to you. It says,
sure.
Who am I? Who am I? Who are you? Rid yourself of ethers and ors. Use mom's magic mirror containing all gods speaking your truth. Is she one or many? Does there have to be an or an either? Could it all be a dance where lovers squirrel in ecstasy? What is normal? What isn't? Is the answer to no, yes, and the answer to yes, no? Is it all the dance of love, the spinning thrills of the gods? Questions only your heart can decide, not any book on philosophy, not even this one. Beware the one who says he has the answers. Follow your heart. She's smarter than your head. The woman in you knows how relationships embed. This dance of love is what we will explore together. We shall see how stars, birds, bees, and coconut trees came to be. And more importantly, we shall see the mother in thee.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has a marvelous way of expressing the divine and how we relate to it.
Well, you know, that whole talk about following your heart seems to be, you know, the connection to God. I mean, God is so much, but ultimately he is love, and or she, you know, however you want to conceive of God. And, you know, love is what binds us all together and makes us all one. And yet we don't truly love ourselves oftentimes, and we project that onto other people.
Well, he maintains that life is, in a way, the dance of love, and that we explore together in the presence of God what it means to, at one point he talks about figure skating dancers and how they will separate in order to be able to relate to each other, but then rejoin and come back together in ecstasy. And he feels that, and I agree with him, that life is a dance of love, and that we are meant to fully enjoy it.
Yes, yes. I totally agree with that. I totally agree. Well, unless he has anything further to say on the subject, let's segue to talking about your mutual journey with Alzheimer's. And since I have you on the line, let me start off with you and ask you when either of you first became aware that anything was amiss.
I think he realized it first. For one thing, because he worked in the as a counselor in the psychiatric field, and I think he realized it. When he first expressed to me that it was a problem was when he was driving, or supposedly driving, to a client's house, because he did in-home counseling with families that had a child at risk of being taken out of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, even though he had been there before, he just totally lost his way and, you know, began to become confused. And
mm-hmm.
at that point, he went to his workplace people and said, you know, I'm losing it. I'm mixing up clients, and I'm you know, no longer easily driving to the right place. And then he started with the testing. But long before the doctors understood that he had a problem, he did.
I see. How long ago was that?
That was about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, he told the doctor his concern, and the doctor said, well, if you're asking about it and thinking about it, it can't be so, which, of course, was absurd. But he was messing up enough on the job so that he insisted on getting testing that showed it. And no, and then we went on from there. And it's been a fairly slow descent. There are times that it's shockingly, you know, I'll be shocked by the suddenness of something that he had obviously been able to handle the day before and now couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that transient in nature, or does there seem to, once there's a bit of a decline, that it's like he's lost a certain type of functioning?
Yes, to both of those. It definitely becomes more and more frequent and whatever, but there are also lucid periods when he seems to understand more than I do. And in fact, in a journal that we are keeping together about Alzheimer's, I wrote in an early entry, it is possible that Alzheimer's can manifest, at least for a time, as an altered state of mind. It appears to be freeing Burl to write from his heart and insight more passionately. And so in some ways it's a great loss. And then I will, for instance, know that if he's gone into the kitchen to get something, that he may very well turn back to me and say, what is it that I'm getting? Or even if he knows what he's getting and he's been looking in the refrigerator for a while, then he'll lose track of what it is he's looking for. And yet, with all of that, he keeps on writing, which is another thing I say is Alzheimer's calls out to us, cry out the good news that conscious human evolution is a possible and practical response to the many converging threats to human life on Earth. Keep writing, even when nobody seems to be listening, certainly not the powers that be. Go on writing, even when it isn't paying your most basic bills or bolstering your ego. And he's doing exactly that. He writes prolifically.
That's beautiful.
And, you know, and then I end up it appears that as his conditioned brain loses memory, linear logic, and control, that his access to the collective consciousness of humanity and the wisdom of Sophia opens up more widely. And it seems to me possible that the breakdown of inhibitions and social judgments about what is appropriate and the left brain dominant thinking lets go to some extent and gives him more freedom to explore wisdom as he sees it, as he experiences it. Do you have something you want to say about that, Burl?
And I can reinforce what Mary's saying because it's been interesting. I write for an online paper, op-ed, and some of my writings there have really taken off. I don't think a lot of people are into it that much, but it's, you know, it's just getting deeper and deeper, and you know, I just feel like the pattern is just really, really unfolding.
Do you find from that standpoint that you're experiencing more of a gift as far as wisdom goes than you'd experienced in the past?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because I sometimes see the Alzheimer's as a double-edged sword. One side of that, yeah, I mean you're forgetting stuff and you know and that sort of thing. But also, I don't know, it makes you think things. Yeah, how am I trying to put this? It helps you to put things more in perspective. I don't know how to kind of. Word that Mary wants to say something.
Okay.
Yeah. In that regard, we think about, is there a way to compensate for all that's being lost, all that's being destroyed? But finding an affirmative answer to this is possible when we surrender our egos to the infinite, eternal I am of life itself. And that way, when we let go of limiting cultural means that keep our hearts and hands enslaved and that have been force-fed into our heads, it frees us to access the universal mind, and our inner eyes are opening to a beauty and abundance. And my hope is that even as he loses language, he will be able communicate with me on some kind of nonverbal level that I can then, you know, insights and the marvelous wisdom that he contains, and that I will be able then to translate it into words to share with the public.
Mm.
So we kind of view dementia as a potential gift or altered state of mind. Now, whether that's far-fetched or not, only time will tell. But the world's visionaries and mystics are coming to accept destruction as an essential phase of ongoing creation. The dementia could be Burroughs' way of letting go of the culture-conditioned brain in order to reach out to the mind of the universe at a time when we all need to need to go that same route, not necessarily with Alzheimer's, of course.
Right.
But
How do the two of you deal with the daily frustrations connected to the lapses and memory and how that impacts upon you?
Well, of course, there are certain things that we've had to cut back. Neither of us really can drive safely anymore, and so we've had to give up our automobile and therefore some of our independence. But on the other hand, as people and local agencies, like Catholic Charities even, gather around us and friends gather around us, in losing the ability to do everything for ourselves, we are gaining an understanding that we're embedded in a life and in a community that one way or another will support us.
Well, I imagine that having a positive outlook is paramount in terms of maintaining a sense of personal security and hope for your future.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know exactly what direction it will turn in, and whether at some point he will be able to communicate with me what he's thinking and experiencing nonverbally or not. But I do know that he's able to communicate with the dog, for instance, without words, very, very powerfully. But there are frustrating moments. There are times when, about the fourth time he asks the same question within an hour, I can hear the frustration in my voice as I answer him, and then I have to remind him myself, you know, this is not him, this is the disease, there's no reason why I should become impatient with it. I have plenty of time to answer the same question over and over.
Well, you must be developing a tremendous capacity for patience as a result.
Yes, exactly, and I think that's a point that any of us that are caregivers for anybody in any circumstances, whether it's babyhood or a disease or Alzheimer's or handicap or whatever it is, as caregivers, we gain in our own soul, in our own spirit, in our own eyes even, strength that we wouldn't have gained otherwise.
How important is it to remain present?
For the most part, pretty important. Although when I sink into despair about anything, for instance, when we had to come out of a living facility because they became unwilling to deal with our dog and, they felt she was a threat to people. And we had to come home. I sunk into a great deal of despair because I was having to give up the idea that I would be right there in an apartment with him, and then eventually when he went downstairs into the Alzheimer's facility, that I still, you know, daily could be with him. And it just wasn't working, and I was getting sicker and sicker. And when I go way downhill, he seems to rally some. I think his intuitive take on me allows him to be a comfort to me. And now I realize that he was absolutely right, that we couldn't give up the dog. We had to come back home because the dog is part of us, is part of our relationship, is part of how we communicate with each other and with the world.
How long have you been back home?
Since before Christmas, just before Christmas.
And how's that been going for you?
Well, you know, it took a while because we live out in sort of in the boonies. It took a while to line up people that could help us and transportation and, you know, things like getting groceries and somebody that could either shop for us or take us shopping. And to tell you the truth, the Alzheimer's hasn't been as much of a problem living out here, you know, alone rather than in a somewhat group setting, as his Crohn's has. His Crohn's makes it very, very hard for him to eat much of anything, and, you know, so he sort of grazes during the day instead of eating meals. And he's in a lot of pain a lot of the time. I think he would agree with me that in many ways the Crohn's is more handicapping than the Alzheimer's.
How long has he had the Crohn's?
Oh, let's see. He first developed it right before his mom died, which was in November 2 years ago. And it's been fairly progressive since then. Is something that, you know, obviously it, when it comes to a point that he can't handle pull-ups and everything, that I am not going to be able on my own to take care of him for the Crohn's, even if and when I'm still able to take care of him, be a caregiver for the Alzheimer's. And so we continue to look for a place where both we and the doggy can live pretty.
What is your dog's name?
Her name is Collie, K-A-L-I, and Collie, I'm sure you're aware, is an Indian goddess of darkness and destruction on the one hand, and light and opening up the space for new creation, recreation, evolution on the other hand.
How old is she?
Collie is... four now, and she is a little bit of a terrorist, and the people at the place that we were absolutely right that we hadn't done all we could to help socialize her, partly because both of us tend to look at animal nature as being its own, you know, its own way of being that we shouldn't be interfering with any more than is necessary. But now we're we're doing more to train her. And in fact, use a little collar that will vibrate the way your cell phone will vibrate in your pocket if you have the volume turned off.
Yes.
And that's enough to catch her attention, and she fairly quickly is learning. So you can teach an old dog new tricks, especially when it's very important to you and very important to the dog that you be able to stay together and relate.
Sure, sure, that's understandable. Well, what kinds of suggestions would you have to people that are starting on this journey? What kinds of suggestions can you give to people that will inspire them with hope that they can, to a certain degree, chart their own destiny, as you have done?
Ah, well, first off, I would advise them to realize that the end of whatever it's going to be comes gradually, maybe more gradually for us than for other people, but that there's always something to celebrate that you really can still share, that you really can still do together. And, of course, the person becomes, you become more aware of how precious the person is to you.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore will look for ways to continue communication, continue contact. But you are going to have to make sure that that you don't get totally overburdened and that you begin to reach out for all the different kinds of help that that your community and your neighbors provides. And
I think that's
where you're going to get your help. But the help does not come through institutions, does not come through government, programs or something. But the help comes on a very, very human level. My feeling is to meet whatever your need is. But then I feel that way about life anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That life meets our needs.
It sounds like you've taken a very down-to-earth approach, that you're very practical and that you avail yourself of whatever resources there are out there to avoid burning out.
Yes, yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's why, we continue to look, and I especially continue to look, because that kind of research wouldn't be possible for him at this point, for places where we can be together, but where things like meals are taken care of, it's just a question of going down and getting them at the right time, and where companionship, other relationships are possible, because I think if the relationship between you, if you're still functional within our world of words and social structures, you're going to need, along with your relationship to the person who's losing that, you're going to need other relationships to sustain you.
Yes. What would you say has been the biggest challenge or the biggest challenges for you thus far?
Biggest challenge. What's been the biggest challenge is times that I myself have either become sick or depressed or whatever, and I need help, and then I have to be thinking about, if I go somewhere to get help, or if I become unable to help us, then the worries about who's going to take care of both of our needs. Because, you know, I'm a 71-year-old woman. It's not as if I'm at the end of my days, but I certainly can't manage all on my own anymore. So I guess realizing that what's hardest for me is when I am faced with my own limitations, how can I then help to structure the whole situation and relationship in such a way that he gets to be as full a person and as he's capable of being, and I get to be as full a person as I'm capable of being.
Wow.
Which isn't what the institutions towards.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it's marvelous, the attitude that you have towards this, and the way you're looking for the silver lining is just very inspirational to me.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Is there anything else that Burl would like to say?
Let me ask him. Is there anything else?
Hi. My experience with Alzheimer's, yeah, it's kind of hard for me to say, because right now I've got a flare-up of Crohn's, which is an intestinal disorder.
Yeah.
And, is really kicking me.
Yeah.
Whereas with the dementia, I mean, I get embarrassed when I forget somebody's name or, you know, whatever, or get lost in places where, you know, I should have know where I was going. So, you know, that's, you know, a lot of times, yes, I realize that I'm going to deteriorate into, you know, basically having to have 24-hour support. At least that's, you know, unless these other diseases take over and, you know, I wind up going out of the world for, you know, sooner rather than later, so. We'll just have to see how that goes.
Right. Well, how do you keep hope alive for yourself? I mean, it sounds like you both have a very upbeat outlook, attitude, from what I've heard from our discussions. How do you manage to keep that hope alive?
That's interesting, because I really think that I'm very good about thinking of things that I'm doing and how it might impact 7 generations in the future. And so with my books, Sophia's Web, and, it, you know, that's one of the hopes that I have for that is that it can pull human beings into a unified diversity, instead of going through all these warfares and stuff, which in my opinion has been done consciously by a lot of the politicians and stuff, you know, starting back even before the Roman Empire. It just seemed like war was the thing. And, I think we need to get beyond that and really, learn how to be more unitive, brothers and sisters, as they used to say.
I couldn't agree more. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me tonight. And
thank you.
You know, especially given what's going on with your stomach.
Yeah.
Is there anything that Mary would like to say before we call it a close?
Let me put her over. And thanks a lot for the interview. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Hi.
It's been an honor. Hi, Mary. I wondered if you had any parting words before we came to a close.
Ah, well, yes, I do. I'm just looking at the journal that he and I are both keeping, and I say I have two conflicting reactions. What a beautiful mind and heart I'm privileged to share my life with and help him share with the world. And on the other hand, I'm likely to think you've said all this before and in a number of different ways, Pearl, and the world isn't listening. The redundancy wears me out. So it ends up that I am a many-handed goddess and a many-headed demon all wrapped into one, being lover, spouse, and caregiver to an increasingly demented genius is an amazing opportunity and burden. And I'm determined to find a way to live with this paradox.
Well, that is powerful.
Thank you.
We create our own realities given whatever it is we have to deal with. We have choices each step of the way, and it's how we handle those choices and our attitudes that make all the difference in the world. And I really respect you for how you're dealing with this challenge and viewing it as an opportunity. I think that's an important lesson for all of us, that every situation that comes our way in life, no matter how we may perceive it, is an opportunity for learning and growing. And I see that that's how you're handling your situation, and my hat's off to both of you.
Well, thank you.
Well, we seem to have lost contact with our guest tonight, so it would be appropriate for us to bring the show to a close. And if they come back on and have any additional words, I will bring them on the air. But for now, let's pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.